All right, looks like we're all ready. Go ahead and call this meeting to order. And meeting's been properly noticed, correct? We have a quorum. Go ahead and start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And the first item on the agenda today is recognition of Dr. Mada for his service as interim chief health officer for the board over this past year. And I want to give the board an opportunity to recognize him in talking with some of his assistants as to what he might like in connection with this. And there will be a reception, I believe, after this. But, you know, they told me that he probably wouldn't like a dust collector, and you know, if it were me, I wouldn't like one either. But I just wanted to, I think the appropriate way to recognize Dr. Mada is just to let him know how much we appreciate him and what great things he's done for us as a board. Dr. Mada, let me start by just saying what a pleasure it has been to work with you and see how you've carried yourself over this past year. I feel like you've been just a great enabler for the whole district, and you know, you've had a vision, I think, for the future of where we need to go. And unfortunately, in a lot of ways, your tenure, of course, was short, and you're not going to be here necessarily to carry that whole vision out. But I think you've set the stage, and I think it was infectious. You're able to show that to everybody, all the employees, staff, public, and board members. And you're always out. You weren't afraid to be out among the public and among the board members and to reach out to us and to the various jurisdictions and, you know, find out what our needs were and try to make the things that we thought needed to happen. And, you know, I just found that you were very thoughtful in your approach. I know you had passion for various things like epidemiology and just, you know, getting the data. So if, you know, from my perspective, everything you've done has just been an amazing job in making the district a cohesive place where employees seem to be happy. Everybody feels like they can do their job, and it's been a transitional period too, and we've had to come into this new building and all the headaches that are involved with that. It's just an amazing where we've come in just 1 year. So I'm going to turn the time over to everybody else, but I just want to let you know personally how much I appreciate your help. Anybody else? We'll just start at the end down there.
Medical Society, and he's always been a constant and very beneficial presence there to remind the doctors, you know, really why did we go to medical school in the first place, and remind us about public health issues, and I just want to thank him for that.
Going down the road.
Yeah, just continue down the road, whoever would like to chime in.
Thank you. Dr. Mada, I think next to Frank, I've probably been on the board almost the longest. Oh, no, Tim outdoes me, but he's older anyway, so. just kidding. I guess I could sum it up as you were the calm after the storm. And I think that that your passion for public health always remain there. And sometimes we get into the weeds, and sometimes we need to get into the weeds, but we always need to still remember what our mission is. And I think you've always made sure that we remember the fact that we are a public health board office, that we have to look at safety, all the components that go in to make a better community. And so I think you've done a great job on that. And I do think even before you moved to this position, you helped to crack that ice, because you were willing to come forward on some things with budgetary issues that forced the board to have to deal with things. And that speaks to leadership. And I thank you and wish you the best.
Hi, Dr. Madah. I think you're truly going to be missed by this community. You bring a level of professionalism that has evolved that was needed in my experience with the health district in the past as an employee for a brief period of time, and also as a person who moved here in 1988 that was here when the health district didn't have any biohazardous waste regulations and syringes went out the door. So we've come a long, long way, and I think you've helped to capitalize on that and grow this health district into a very sophisticated, professional level of health care in respect to public health. And I appreciate everything you've done, and I enjoyed the brief period I got to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Madah, on behalf of Mesquite, we're going to miss you up there. Unusual to get somebody even coming up to Mesquite to visit us. We're a lost world. And I know it's going to be extremely difficult to fill your shoes, but I know that the fishing poles are ready and the hiking boots are ready. And all I can say is I wish you a great future.
Dr. Madah, you were a breath of fresh air when you took over the reins of the health district. I had been here serving on this board for the year before, and I was very dismayed to see that there was a lot of unhappiness here at the Board of Health, and that has just changed dramatically with you at the helm. The employees are no longer here complaining, and I think they are happy to come to work every day to fulfill a great mission. I know I was frustrated trying to get my clinic in North Las Vegas seemed to be the most daunting task. And all of a sudden you took the reins, and the next thing I knew I was getting a tour of the new health clinic in North Las Vegas. For what seemed to be a can't-do attitude all of a sudden changed, it seems like, overnight to a can-do. And I thank you for that. I think that the entire feel at the health district is different since you've taken over, and you will be sorely missed. But we do wish you all the best in from North Las Vegas.
I just want to reiterate what everybody else has had to say. I turn back to what Commissioner Gia said. I've served on this board across three CHOs now, and I think that you brought a framework to the administration here that is unsurpassed, and it's certainly going to set the standard for the future. And I think the fact that you have technical expertise, medical expertise, a great administrator, and a good communicator with the community and with the board is setting a high standard for the future. So many thanks for taking over in a turbulent time.
You've done an absolutely outstanding job for us and for the citizens of our county. And personally, I hope you will always carry within your heart, within your memories, these numerous accolades, the words of respect, the kindness we felt from you, the professionalism we felt from you, the hard work, the dedication, all of that, all that's been mentioned here, keep it in your mind and your memory so that it warms you always. And thank you so very much for spending some time with us.
This is only my third meeting, but I have to tell you that from an outsider looking in for the last year, you can tell that there is a difference at the Board of Health just by the things that you read in the newspaper, by the openness that you have had with not only your staff and this board, but the press. I think that you have changed the perception of public health in the last year and done a really magnificent job doing that. Thank you.
And it's hard to add anything else new, but it is really incredible in 1 year the difference that you've made. And as chair, past year working closely with you, I so much appreciate your communication. And public health is for public, it's not a practice for individuals. And yet I think your commitment is to individuals. It's a care and concern for each individual, and that shows through in kindness. So I very much have appreciated working with you, and it's quite remarkable what you accomplished in a year. Took some bold moves and made a huge change. We appreciate it very much and wish you the best.
I'm going to be very brief and just say thank you for a job very well done. I appreciated the time I've had to work with you and wish you all the best in retirement.
I spent 10 years as a Navy reservist. We spent a lot of that time learning about leadership development and what qualities make a good leader. You need someone who can, you know, read the waters, trim the sails when necessary, and get us all to a safe harbor when there's a hideous storm. You've been able to do all those things, and you've been a great captain. We appreciate it.
Thank you again. All right, we'll move on to item number one, which is public comment, and this period is devoted to comments for items on the agenda. Do we have anyone wishing to speak? Yes, please.
Hi, my name is Carrie Evangelista. I'm the chief steward of the general unit for the health district here. I know I said at the last board meeting, but this one, there's the whole board's here. And I want to also thank Dr. M for coming in and really helping the employees at a rough time. And it really is true. I mean, it's not perfect, obviously. There's disagreements, but there's compromise. And one of the first things that Dr. M did when he came in was he came into environmental health and he had a meeting with us, and we sat in a circle, and we all talked and told him how we felt and things like that. And I just feel like you've really been a great leader here. And you know, I always think that one characteristic of a leader is when people will follow them, and I feel like we all followed you and, you know, carried on, and we'll really miss you. And we are committed as employees to working with, I said a lot at the last board meeting, with the next chief health officer, and we hope to create another relationship like we did with Dr. M. And I hope you have a good time with whatever you're doing next. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? All right, we'll move on to item number two, which is adoption of the August 22nd, 2013 agenda.
So moved.
Have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item number three is the consent agenda. And do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, could yes. I ask a question of Mary Ellen, just on the trauma
sure.
center?
Sure. Go ahead.
I don't think it needs to come off consent, but we're not changing any of the trauma centers. It's just St. Rose stays as the three, Sunrise as two, and we didn't get into any of that other internal differences, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. That's all I had then. Thank you. Did you have anything else to add?
I did not. Dr. Dong covered it.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you very much. Then those were the only questions. If there aren't any more, I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And we have, looks like, no public hearing items for action. That's correct. Okay. And so we're going to move on to closed session. And do we need a motion for that?
I would make a motion to go into closed session for the purpose of discussing NRS 241.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Nevada Health District Nursing Services immunization fee schedule. Direct staff accordingly or take other action as deemed necessary. Elaine's back.
Thank you. Back again. Petition 2113. So, 2313. What we did here was look at the fee schedule that's currently in place. With the Affordable Care Act, we're moving into contracting with third-party payers. So one of the things before we signed any contracts or reached out to finalize any agreements We wanted to be sure our pricing was in place. So we looked at cost of doing business. This is a break-even cost. So we looked at nursing services, what it costs to deliver the vaccine service supplies, and the indirect rate that would be applied, and then came up with our pricing for this particular schedule. So what we're asking is that you approve the new immunization schedule that's before you. There's some subtle changes, not significant. I think the number one factor is we never turn anybody away. And so we also compared ourselves to Washoe County, Carson City, and Maricopa County just to make sure we were in the range and that there was nothing, no outliers, or we didn't miss anything. We looked at our vaccine pricing and then did a projection of what the actual break-even cost is. So that's what this schedule reflects, and we request your approval. Yes. Sure.
Yes.
the administration fee at the bottom of that. Sorry, I wasn't able to brief, so I didn't get to ask that question. But $16 for one shot, $25 for two, is that on top?
That is, yes. And that's standard, even throughout the rest of the counties.
I believe you answered your question, but this still remains if somebody has no funding and the process is just verbal, they don't have to fill out any paperwork or bring any
That's correct.
Tax records or anything of that nature.
That's correct. It's self-report.
Any other questions or discussion? Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next item is number two, review and or update Board of Health committees and committee memberships, direct staff accordingly, or take other action as deemed necessary.
According to Board Governance Policy, BGP 004, the committees are updated every August. And I believe you had the updated committee since your portal. The last year's committee list since the portal. Is that correct?
I do have that. You put it in the portal.
Okay, why don't you give it to them?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Wood.
Annette, I have a question. What is the rule as far as alternate serving on the various committees?
Alternates can serve as long as the regular member is unavailable.
That was Siri.
Siri.
That's Siri.
Siri.
I didn't know what it did, and I did it every time.
Siri is in the house.
Sorry, man. I was trying to help you.
Thank you. Alternates can serve as long as the regular member is unavailable.
Okay.
And that's in the BGP as well.
Mr. Jones.
I didn't quite catch the...
The question was, can alternates serve on the committees? And the answer is yes. As long as the regular member is unavailable, the alternate can serve.
One of the committees I see on the nomination of officers, excuse me, the nomination of appointed.
Member,
the at-large
member selection. First one.
The very first one. At-large member selection.
Okay. And I think that said that only elected members could serve on that. I don't know if that is necessarily the case. I think that, and I'm questioning that.
I don't know where that came from.
So I believe that only electeds can appoint.
Correct.
That the selection committee could, in my opinion, should include some existing appointed members.
Right. The board has already stated that it's going to treat all members equally. The statute requires that elected members select the at-large members.
Well, I mean, it becomes difficult, I have to tell you, as someone who's sitting on that board, when you are being asked to have people who are among those being chosen and then have them on the committee to select. You know, it puts us, I think, in a very, very difficult position. So I personally don't think I do think it should remain elected members only, but that's my personal opinion. But that's because it does put us in a difficult situation of trying to do interviews. And then, you know, if you have one of the at-large members that's sitting on the committee, how do they help judge, you know, when they have a bias, they're going to end up abstaining anyway, because you can't sit here and judge the person you're like running against basically for the same seat. So I mean, it's not as simple as it sounds.
If I might, Mr. Chair, I think
yes.
That was the genesis, but it was in place before I got on the board. But I think the previous discussion had been because at-large members are the unelecteds, and they, if they were to serve on the same committee to nominate themselves, it just made it very awkward for people mm-hmm. making a decision. And that may not be why you do policy, but that is a factor that should be in consideration. Because if you have, if you look at the current one with Sam, myself, Alan, Lois, and Anita, if you had a mix of alternates, unless you say alternates can serve but they can't be nominee, then they don't apply for the position, then they're not in a conflict of selecting themselves or someone else. So that's another possibility, that if you choose to be on there, then you're agreeing that you're not going to be putting your name in for the next time around. I don't know.
Well, and what happened, I think, is typically it's been the elected members only. What happened was we had Tim as a chair, and the chair is automatically a member of that board. And so when we opened it, and again, this was before me, but apparently at some point it was, there was only elected served as chairs, and then that's where you're talking about, Annette, that the ruling changed that said we would treat everyone the same, which opened up the chair to non-electeds as well as electeds. Then all of a sudden, because Tim was chair, he was also on the at-large member selection committee. But I know it was very, very difficult to sit there and try to do interviews and try to be respectful of Tim at the same time, also trying to be respectful of other people who might want that position as well.
So you brought up a good point. Are there certain committees that I have to be on then as chair? I guess I need to know that up front, right?
Well, as the chair of the board, you're automatically on the committees unless you delegate it to somebody
on
else.
On all of the committees.
Yes.
Oh wow. Okay.
I see delegation in the wind.
I see delegation coming. Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we should take these one by one. But preliminarily, I think maybe I should ask: Is there anybody currently on any of these committees that does not want to continue serving on these committees?
Mr. Chair, it's not so much that I don't want to continue serving, but Councilman Wagner will become, it technically is already, the official appointee now to the Board of Health. And so therefore, I'm now an alternate, and so my name will have to be removed, I take it, unless...
And Mr. Chair, we also have that situation with Sam Bateman. John Mars is the new.
Right. So those are open seats. The ones in yellow. Right.
They
Anita
do,
and Sam.
They do not have the ones in yellow.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
All right.
Chair. What did we put in? Because I can't remember. Is that what you have? What
well, let's just go through these one by one. I think it's going to be easier. So let's do the at-large member selection committee first. On that committee, last year we had Sam Bateman as chair, Chris Giunchigliani, Alan Littman, Lois Tarkanian, and Anita Wood. And then, am I understanding correctly that the people in red are potential candidates?
They okay. requested to be on those committees.
All right, and so we have Chris G, who's a current member, requesting to be back on, and Alan Littman also requesting to be back on. Lois isn't here, obviously, to speak for herself, but so we have potentially at least two seats open, which are Mr. Bateman's and Ms. Wood's seat. Do I have any nominations?
I move that we compose the committee of John Mars, Chris Giunchigliani, Alan Littman, Lois Tarkanian, and Wade Wagner. Just moving in the alternates into those positions, and then whoever wants to be chair.
And do we need to choose a chair today, or is that done in the committee itself?
You would choose a chair.
I would choose the chair. Is there anyone interested in being the chair?
I move that Chris Giancarlo be the chair with that membership.
I'll second it.
All right, we have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That sounds like the motion carries. So, addition of Mars and Wagner with Commissioner G being the new chair. Let's move on to the audit committee. Last year we had Bob Beers as chair, Sam Bateman, Susan Crowley, Alan Littman, Lori Winchell, and Rod Woodbury. And then as far as those who have expressed interest, Tim Jones, Susan Crowley, who's a current member, and Alan Littman, also a current member. And
Sam wants to come off, so you've got at least one.
So we have at least one available. Does Lori want to continue?
I'll continue.
Okay. And I would also be willing to continue.
Mr. Chair.
Motion.
I would move to have the committee with the same composition, moving John Marson for Sam Bateman and retain Bob Beers as chair.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And then we'll move on to CHO Annual Review Committee. Last year it was Mary Beth Scow chair, Chris G., Dr. Nemec, Bill Noonan, Lois Tarkanian, and Rod Woodbury. And those who have expressed interest this year are current members Mary Beth Scow, Bill Noonan, Chris G., and then also expressing interest are Tim Jones and Susan Crowley. And we don't necessarily have to do this by motion, I don't think. If we want to do nominations first, so we have multiple to choose from, we can do it that way. But we can also do it just by motion. Anyone that's currently on there that does not want to continue serving?
I would like to continue to serve.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Nemec.
As would I, but let me just ask a question, Mr. Chair. Since you are automatic, do you come off and we could put Susan Crowley then in that spot?
Under the board governance policy, there's a maximum of six.
Okay, so he's not. This is not one of his automatics as chair.
It's total number of six, okay, including right. The chair.
Okay, sorry. I didn't realize that.
Okay, so just a question again. Then back on that first one, the at-large, does that mean I'm on that one? Since we only have five?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm willing to entertain a motion or a nomination.
Go over who.
Okay, we've got Mary Beth Scow chair, Chris G., Dr. Nemec, Bill Noonan, Lois Tarkanian, Rod Woodbury, Mary Beth, Bill, and Chris expressed interest as well as being current members and also interest by Tim Jones and Susan Crowley.
I'd like to stay on that if possible.
Okay.
Good also.
So Lois isn't here to speak for herself. I'm more than willing to step down if somebody else would like to be on it. But I'm also willing to serve if I need to.
So just a question on the forms that we were asked to send in, where is that at?
I have them all, and then on.
You have a list that, okay. Did Lois or did we all say?
He has
okay.
Form all the people that have
expressed an interest.
In either remaining on the committee or joining
okay.
the committee. So Chairman Woodbury does have all
okay. the and did Lois indicate? I'm just trying to.
She did not indicate. I would go ahead and nominate Tim and I'd be willing to step down.
And then put Susan in Lois's, or since she didn't indicate, or and maybe make Lois alternate? I don't know. I mean, if she didn't indicate it, I'm just trying to get a handle on who said, yes, I'd like to participate. And if they didn't, then maybe they didn't want to any longer.
Not everybody responds.
Yeah.
I've only gotten about six.
Shame on us.
So you're aware, Lois is also was the chair of the Nomination of Officers Committee,
right.
And she was also on the Ad Hoc Replacement Facility Committee.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to have the committee as constructed, with Tim Jones taking the place of Lois Tarkanian, and making you chair.
Making who chair?
You. Mr. Chair can be the chair.
Oh, but you're putting Tim in place of Lois.
Tim in place of Lois, okay.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. All right, Nomination of Officers Committee. Last year we had Lois Tarkanian chair, Sam Bateman, who's no longer with us, Bob Beers, Tim Jones, and Alan Littman. Mr. Littman would like to continue.
Right.
Mary Beth has expressed interest, and Susan Crowley has expressed interest. We can have up to six, correct?
Correct.
So there are, last year we had five, and then minus Sam Bateman would be four, so we have two open positions and two more who have expressed interest, which would be Mary Beth and Susan.
You can take mine off.
Well, I believe you can both be on there if...
That's yeah, there's
okay.
Two.
It's okay. I don't mind.
And you don't want to be?
Yes, sure, yes.
All right.
Frank?
Well, then, Mr. Chair, I will move to have the nomination of officers as it stands, with the replacement of Sam Bateman by Susan Crowley.
I have a second.
Second.
Oh. Could I add John Marsh? Because he's only on one committee. So then if we had John Marsh
and the
on that also,
John
and then
Marsh.
We'd have.
Actually, you added John to both at large and audit. Just to make sure on his time.
At large? I don't have.
Not at large.
Yes, I do. Mars and Wagner,
yeah,
for at large.
Okay. Oh, we do.
I take that back.
Yeah, I don't, you know, lock him in. Well, since we can have six, if he expressed an interest, we can check with him and always add him. But I hate to do that to somebody. They may have other obligations.
Okay, so I have a motion and I believe a second for the prior board minus Sam Bateman and adding Susan Crowley. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right, moving on to the Ad Hoc CHO Succession Committee. Last year we had Tim Jones as chair, Bob Beers, Susan Crowley, Mary Beth Scow, Anita Wood, Rod Woodbury, and Dr. Nemec. Did we have seven?
The board approved the addition of the seven because of the issues that were ongoing. Now this, because the CHO Succession Committee is still ongoing, if this composition changes, it would take effect after the
negotiations
are completed.
Okay.
So, Annette, are you saying that I can, even though as an alternate, I can remain since I've been on that?
That's my question. Is that the intent of the board whatever changes you make to this CHO Succession Committee would not take place until after negotiations for Dr. Iser's position were completed?
Personally, I think that makes good sense.
Yeah.
You need
yeah.
that continuity because
yeah.
you all have been involved in that from day one. So.
Okay, so that will continue then, assuming we approve that, and then Anita would then have to come off?
Correct.
Okay.
Do we even need to fill this committee at this point in time, or just do it when the necessity arises?
Well, because the Board Governance Committee, the Board Governance Policy says every August, that's why it's before us, ad hoc committees die automatically once their role is completed.
Yeah.
So once that role is completed, then the board would then need to, well, the CHO job would be done.
So there's not a
so
need to.
So there wouldn't
you
necessarily
would
be a need
committee.
To fill it.
So, Annette, my question is, as an alternate, do I have to come off since I've been part of that process, the current process?
No, the board could approve you staying on because Wagner won't be available until September.
Correct.
So I think you're fine.
Okay.
Plus, I think your knowledge of the process is something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. At this point, I'm kind of through all
yes.
of it. I might as well kind of wrap it up. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So do we need a motion at all?
No, I think we're good.
And then we'll move on to the Ad Hoc Replacement Facility Committee. We had last year Anita Wood, Chair, Susan Crowley, Bill Noonan, Mary Beth Scow, Lois Tarkanian, Lori Winchell, and we noted that did not meet during the last year. So I believe Anita would have to come off, and I don't have anyone down here as having expressed any interest in joining.
Well, since the committee didn't meet last year, is this something that we really need?
You might want some guidance as they move through negotiations, but that's up to this board to decide. So you might want to keep it just, if Elaine all of a sudden comes up and goes, oh my gosh, we got this, at least to have a sounding board to go to so nobody thinks, but it may not be an issue. I don't know.
One option would be to close it until needed. The full board can make a decision at that point.
We'd have to come back to a closed session anyway to discuss any settlement options.
So we can either reconstitute it.
We can mothball it. Is that a proper legal term? Mr. Chair, what's your preference?
I'm willing to serve on any committee that never meets.
I was just going to make the same motion for myself.
Well said. Well, how about we just keep those folks as upon call of the chair?
Okay. And I guess that? I'm on there by default, right? Okay. Unless.
Right. So you may not meet again.
So right.
My motion would be upon call of the chair, then this committee would be constituted.
All right. So do we have a motion to reconstitute the same?
That said, just to understand, would Anita stay on that committee or you would replace Anita?
Sounds like I would replace Anita.
I'll make the motion.
Second. And who would be replacing Anita?
Rod.
Rod.
The chair.
Okay.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And our last committee is Medical Corridor Committee. Last year we had Chairwoman Lois Tarkanian, Bob Beers, Chris G., Marietta Nelson, Mary Beth Scow, and Lori Winchell. A note here says that they met once in March, which was the second meeting, or there was a second meeting scheduled, but had no agenda items for discussion, so it was canceled. Is there anyone wishing to come off that committee? And I don't have anybody noted as having expressed interest as joining, so unless
I'd be happy to stay, but I don't know what Lois's intent is. When we put that together here, I think it was because the city was doing its redevelopment program. There may be some money that could come into play for the health district if we play it right. So maybe we keep that alive to see if there's some redevelopment dollars that come in, just as a thought.
Okay. So do I have a motion to?
My motion would be keep the folks as they are and then report back to the board. Potential.
I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I believe we've covered all of them. So we'll move on to next item, number three, receive update regarding CHO selection and appointment status, district operational options, and discuss and delegate follow-up responsibilities, direct staff accordingly, or take other action as deemed necessary. And who's taking this one?
Well, I think we should probably do it together.
Okay, do I start?
Dr. Madonna, I've had a chance to speak with Dr. Iser, and I sent you earlier this morning some information. Previously, I sent you a boilerplate employment agreement. Earlier this morning, I sent you some updates to that employment agreement with respect to some of the terms that Dr. Mada and I were able to flesh out with Dr. Iser. We have a CHO succession committee meeting scheduled for September 6th. Is that in the morning?
9 o'clock.
At 9 o'clock. And I believe Dr. Iser will be available by phone for that meeting. I do not believe we have a start date yet from, a potential start date yet from Dr. Iser. With respect to the transition plan, I'll let Dr. Mada speak to that.
The recommendation that we followed up is in the transition plan, given my departure tomorrow, is Dr. Nancy Williams has agreed to serve as an acting CHO. She's licensed and has her DEA number for the window of period of time between my departure and hopefully the board's agreement to finalize a contract with Dr. Iser. She's indicated that she's happy to step up to the plate and do that, and the leadership team is, of course, willing to totally support her and in order to make sure that we have adequate continuity and oversight of our operations. But Dr. Williams has indicated that she does not want to pursue this as a permanent or long-term acting role and wants to, once hopefully there's an agreement with Dr. Iser and we know when he will be starting, then she would return to her current position.
Thank you.
We thought you might want to. She's actually presented on several occasions about some of the work that she's been overseeing in epidemiology, and she's actually will be providing you a status report on TB in just a few minutes. But
thank you. Yes, this, I think I know who all of you are from having come to board meetings. I completely understand people not knowing me very well. And Dr. Mada asked me if I would be willing to fill this role on a short-term basis, and I'm happy to do that if it's in the best interest of the health district and if you would support me in doing that. And the reason that I feel relatively comfortable in saying yes to this is because of the capable division directors that are here at the district and just knowing the support that I'll get for them. So and I see this role as sort of twofold. One part is to help with the transition and make sure that the things that are already planned to be happening during the next several or month or so until Dr. Iser gets here are able to continue, and then I can support them in getting that done. And the other part would be to do whatever I can do to help Dr. Iser's transition. And if he has any things I can do, you know, in the interim before he gets here, then I'd be willing to do that. Now, obviously, I would not be stepping into this role to make any changes or do anything major. And I, you know, definitely think it would be important to leave all that for Dr. Iser, who would be taking over later. So I see it as a, you know, relatively minimal role, just making sure that I'm here to help when it's needed.
Thank you. Mr. Jones.
A couple of questions. Do we need any contract update for Dr. McWilliams? Meantime, or any nothing needs to be updated there? And then second question is, Dr. Iser is agreeable to these elements that you sent to us earlier today?
That's what we discussed, yes.
Okay. I do see in there the issue of leave time, so that seems to be a combination of sick leave and
correct.
Annual leave.
Thank you.
Thank you. So you'll be able to sign if something comes in as a medical director that requires signature. That was the DEA
yes.
component that Dr. Mada
yes.
talked about. Okay, number one. Welcome. But I do think we should discuss if you have somebody doing additional work, there should be additional compensation. So I don't know if that was discussed with anybody, but that should be. And thirdly, then on the Dr. Iser's, what we received today on the memo, that goes to the negotiations
the committee. Yes.
Because I'm still concerned about the salary, I'm still concerned about the termination language, and I want to get a better handle on the annual leave cost breakout. So just so that's noted, because if we went back to the salary that he was making, I granted there should be an increase, it's a larger county, et cetera, but I don't know what that salary is based on, and to go from 162 to 235 is still a huge leap. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I have one more thing I will mention. Just, of course, I didn't realize this opportunity was going to be presented to me, and so I have several pre-approved vacation days during the month of September that I think I would want to discuss with you.
Absolutely.
Beforehand. So nothing, not a big stretch, but several three-day periods. And I just need to know if I need to adjust that or not.
Thank you. We appreciate your willingness to volunteer or to allow yourself to be volunteered, as the case may be. I'm not sure. And we don't need a motion on this, do we? Okay.
No, but I do think the compensation, if Dr. Madon.
And I would agree with that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll work that out. Be pretty standard.
Okay, we will move on to the next item, number four. Discuss and approve, consistent with board governance policy BGP-0062A, board governance process, the development and implementation of day-to-day operational policies and procedures by district management, direct staff accordingly, or take other action as deemed necessary.
Over the past few months, the district has been engaged in a process of policy management. We've been reviewing and updating and as necessary repealing and creating district-wide policies, operational policies and procedures, all to ensure that the appropriate policies and procedures are current and in place so they can be managed effectively and consistently. Section 2 of the Personnel Code provides that the district reserves the right to exercise customary managerial functions, which includes, among other things, the right to change and abolish policies. Article 10, Section 5 of the Collective Bargaining Agreement seems to imply that some policy changes must be submitted to the Board of Health. Specifically, that language says that except in cases of emergency, in the event the district makes changes to district-wide policies, the item must be placed on the Joint Labor Management Committee agenda for discussion prior to submittal to the Board of Health for approval. Submitting it to the Joint Labor Management Committee is a non-issue. However, the board is a general oversight board that provides broad policies on the goals and objectives and visions of the district. Operational policies is a customary managerial function for the district. So in furtherance of that, we thought that as we move into the collective bargaining discussions, we can always correct that language, correct that disconnect between the personnel code and the CBA. Correct the disconnect between the operational ability of the district by simply having this board affirm the district's managerial ability to effect operational policies and procedures, which is consistent with the board governance policy that recognizes the board's overall operational role and the management's day-to-day operational function.
Thank you. Do I have any discussion?
This is simply a reiteration of policy and procedure that we have been following.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Jean.
Thank you. Which did you call this, the personnel policy? What was the title?
the board, which one? We've got the board governance policy 006.
Right, and then you have
the. And then we've got, and the board governance policy talks about the overall function of the board.
Right, and that was this document.
Yes.
Right? Okay. All right.
And so it speaks to the overall function of the board and the day-to-day managerial function of management. And then we've got the personnel code that speaks to the customary managerial role, day-to-day operations.
Okay.
And then we have the collective bargaining agreement, which speaks to requiring that we provide district-wide policies to the Joint Labor Management Committee, which is a non-issue. We have no problem with that at all. The sticking point is providing, and sticking point is probably not the most art way to put that, submitting policies to the board prior to submittal. They're day-to-day operational policies. This is a customary function.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about HIPAA policies, we're talking about IT policies, we're talking about day-to-day operational functions.
Where does confidentiality of records come in?
That would have to come to the board as well. Depending upon how you're interpreting that language in the CBA,
mm-hmm.
anything that affected the district-wide would have to come to the board for approval. And all we're saying is that because we are effecting the day-to-day policies, because we're implementing on a day-to-day basis your overall strategies, we're not going to implement something that's beyond the pale. We're simply implementing traditional operational functions.
Okay. So it's the managerial and administrative component of
correct.
It so
that
that's you're speaking all. To. And then down the road, I would like to have a discussion about how the health district determines whether or not what documents are confidential or not under the state law.
Oh, you're talking about public records law?
Public records
yes.
law.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
that's
so
what
that
to.
If we could maybe, Mr. Chair, because and it's something I'm reviewing at the county as well, because it's supposed to err on the side of everything is open unless a case has been made for confidentiality, and I'd like to kind of get a discussion on that part of it. Then in the personnel code, and no disrespect, but I think at our last board meeting, as we gave some direction with Dr. Iser's negotiations, I think to a person we said no more longevity. I believe, though, we still have, according to personnel records or roles or language or policy, that 6 or 7 of the officers still get longevity, and at some point we need to be consistent with that and have that conversation as their contracts come up. And I don't know where that stands, but that's I just remember 7 years ago I raised the issue and kept getting, they thought I'd forget, but I don't.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak? Yes.
I think it's important that we have clarifications on items that need to come before the board, because a while back we had talked about contracts that are over a certain amount of money. So I just like to ensure that those are in the operational policies, that there are safeguards, that major policy, and you mentioned major policy items, contracts over a certain amount of money do come to the board.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Do I have a motion? We need a motion.
I guess we're just continuing with the document that was presented to us. We really aren't making any changes, so I would move that we adopt the board governance. Is that the right title, or
how
it worded?
If I could just affirm management's ability to implement operational policies and procedures.
Okay, that would be my motion.
Do we have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll move on to Roman numeral 7, board reports. Do we have any board reports? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 8. Health officer and staff reports, and turn it over to Dr. Madoff.
Great. I'd just like to ask Amy Arani, acting EH director, to describe to you our new certified food safety manager card. It's something that we're quite happy about.
Thank you. I have a brief, very, very, very brief PowerPoint.
After we've worked the bugs out.
Sorry. No, it's not. Sorry.
Do we have this on our?
I hope so. Thank you. So, good morning. It's my pleasure to introduce you to an enhancement to our current food safety handler program. It's called the Certified Food Safety Manager Card. It's an enhanced training, but before I do this, I'm going to take this opportunity to recognize the creator of this enhancement, Rose Henderson. I want you to know that Rose Henderson has been the mastermind behind the Food Establishment Resource Library, and she was instrumental in developing the Food Handler Online Training with PBS. And as such, this is, again, an enhancement that she came up with, which is incredible. It's not often that we get to recognize environmental health personnel. She has done exceptional work in environmental health for years here, and her dedication, I just wanted you all to see Ms. Henderson and to recognize her here at the board today. So she's an incredible asset to EH. So in moving forward, effective September 1st, we will have implemented the food certified manager card. And the reason that this is important is right now, as you know, we're moving towards risk-based inspections in environmental health, moving away from floors, walls, and ceilings and going to a risk-based. And this is critical to this. And so what is the difference? If you can see the regular food handler card you see the manager identification in red separates it from the regular food handler card that you see the photograph. That is how it would look. The FDA recommends that all restaurants that are active have a food safety manager on site that has this enhanced training and has proven through research gathered over 10 years that having someone with advanced training and advanced skills has helped to enhance food protection and food safety on site. So in our own regs, the SNHD regs governing food establishments, this having a certified food manager on site addresses a requirement with regards to the person in charge when we come in and do our inspection. So how does one get a certified food manager card? So what you would need to do, the individual needs to complete an ANSI accredited course, which is the American National Standards Institute course, and something that many of you may already be familiar with would be ServSafe or ProMetrics, and that is what an ANSI course would be. Now, this higher level of training, yes, Jim?
Would that just be the standard ServSafe course or the instructor course?
That would be the standard, yeah, please.
It would be the standard certified food safety manager level. If we're talking ServSafe, you know, ServSafe also offers a food handler level. This is the higher level where it is the certified food safety manager, but these are not the instructor level, which of course ServSafe has that opportunity that individuals can also teach this coursework, and then also they do certify the proctors when someone takes a proctor exam.
But an instructor level would.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because they have, in fact, went through the process themselves to become an instructor.
That's like that extra bonus, you know, if you could take the instructor level that we're not expecting. So what we would do, they would take the course. We have provided on our website all of the ANSI accredited courses and locations you can go. Of course, you got ServSafe, which is affiliated the National Restaurant Association. You have ProMetric, the National Registry of Food Safety Professionals, and Learn to Serve, which is fairly new that we have. So again, this can be done either at home or you can go into a class and do it as a classroom study. But however, you do have to take the exam in a proctored environment, and it would have to be an exam site where we have an approved proctor to administer the exam. So the benefits. The individual that gets the certified food manager card as opposed to the regular food handler card would have an expiration date or a validity date of 5 years. The normal food handler card has one for 3 years. And then the individual on site would meet that requirement for having someone at a facility that has a higher level of food safety knowledge and then can be that person in charge when we come in to do our inspection. So, again, with this, we feel that educating staff at the establishment, having a certified food manager, helps to enhance our role as regulators in communicating with them, and then it's their best defense against a foodborne illness outbreak by having a person in charge of that caliber. So truly a joint effort to promote public health and to protect everyone. Yes.
So is there a cost for that course?
Go ahead.
All of these courses, these are taught outside through these ANSI accredited agencies, and there is a cost associated with it, which is paid to that agency, and they do take a proctored exam through one of the certified proctoring agencies, so that it is a higher level of education. And as a buyback to industry, since this is more expensive than the online PBS course, it is a higher level, it's a manager level training, so that we are offering, since when they take the exam, they get 5 years on that certificate. And our buyback to industry is that the health card price is staying the same, but they bring in that certificate, and then they have a 5-year card with us versus a 3-year.
Do you know what the cost range is?
It can vary depending upon which agency it is. It is more expensive. It would probably be around, Tim, do you have some idea? Yes. Yes, and that's about what I was seeing with ServSafe.
Does that person become liable if there's a problem?
The business has to serve safe food. One of the things which the FDA sees and also our regulations state is one of the three ways that a food establishment can show knowledge. The person in charge either has to answer all of the food safety questions as are appropriate for that type of business accurately. They do not get any critical or major violations on their inspection report form, or they have a certified food safety manager on site. There's always going to be liability with serving other people food. Knowledge is power, and when it's implemented, they're going to have lower liability in the long run.
So when you say they have to be on site, can they be a part-time employee? Can they set up a consulting business, be a part-time employee, and be the food safety manager of multiple facilities or just one?
Our regulations state that there must be a person in charge in each food establishment during their hours of operation. This is not a consultation thing. This is where someone is taking responsibility to oversee the employees in that facility to assure that they're preparing safe food every day.
I take it this grew out of the Firefly.
Well,
we've been doing this.
Sure.
Actually, I do appreciate the support which Amy has given me in pursuing this with our food safety program, in that we have been working on this since, probably well over a year at this point. So this preceded that having happened. So it's
Firefly's
not reactionary,
not
it has been proactive.
That kind of demerits. We closed down many couple hotel restaurants, so I would hope we wouldn't single that out. Right. I ate there recently and it was darn good. So, Mr. Chair, you answered the question about cost. So the range is about $100. Is this now going to be a mandatory piece for the industry, or are you're looking at ways to incentivize them so that they can say, oh, I can move to this next level. Instead of getting just my straight food handler, I'm going to get promoted to manager, but I'll also go to take this class, and now I can have a 5-year piece, and that's who you deal with, right?
You're exactly correct.
Incentive,
it's
yes.
Just an incentive. It's
okay.
Not a requirement.
And then in our industry, because we're so unique in Nevada, but you have a lot of well-intentioned chefs that are also managers. And I think that's got to be part, I think maybe in the education process is finding folks on site that actually do that day to day. So, because if you're managing the cooking, I'd rather you do that part rather than trying to manage staff. Has there been any conversations? Because we did have some chefs meetings that Marilyn Kirkpatrick and you and Glenn and everybody put together. Is that still ongoing with the industry?
You know, we haven't, it's a very good point. We haven't done that. We've been in kind of a state of flux, as I know that you're aware of,
right.
But we haven't done that. But yes, those were beneficial, and we need to continue that.
Okay. So just so that's, if I get asked by somebody, I say, that's still a plan, is to still have those types of communication.
Absolutely.
And then we were going to kind of brainstorm down the road how to get, because you have many language learners, and that was going to be another, one of my questions, is do these tests come in other languages? Tagala, Spanish, et cetera. But you have Turks, you have Pakistanis, you got everybody out there. And granted, you may not need to do the test that way, but I would hope that there's some acknowledgement that your small mom and pops are your great little backbone, but also more vulnerable. And how do we make sure that we're reaching out to that community?
Sure. Yeah, very good. Go ahead, if you'd like to make a comment.
A couple of things concerning this. I'm finding more and more the chefs which we're working with on the larger level, some of them are even ServSafe instructors. If you happen to look on a recent YouTube video, which we have on the SNHD website, Chef Keith Norman, who is also a ServSafe instructor, he is basically training people at the South Point so that they already have this. This is an enhancement to recognize that they take this additional training, and they will get a different card with us to recognize that they have went that extra step. for the mom and pops and for smaller operators, we don't endorse the Restaurant Association over these ANSI accredited course, because the course content is strictly food safety, not really management of the people besides what they're doing within the kitchens. But most of these agencies do have it in multiple languages, and we have been in conversation with the Restaurant Association hoping they will build out something in Thai, because we do have a number of Thai restaurants, and we do need to meet that need, and we are in discussions concerning that.
And then the Proctor sites, where are those? Are they readily available? Are we using PBS in addition, or, because I know that you do testing online.
Very good question. We don't do online testing with the Certified Food Safety Manager course, because it needs to be proctored. However, I know that there is some discussions with the Restaurant Association on the national level and PBS to partner to work towards building out even more proctoring sites. The Nevada Restaurant Association is one of the primary proctors for this, but there are other ones locally.
Okay, and then our school district has some phenomenal programs in the food area. Do you get invited, or will this become part of curriculum? I'm just thinking for our future chefs, workers, service folks, it might be an interesting opportunity.
A number of the culinary schools, I believe part of it is that some of them are ServSafe instructors.
And I think Chef Burpee is probably at the Culinary Training Center, Okay.
Yes,
so just trying to, because if those kids at VOTEC, you know, in the old food program, which I think still exists, or ATEC, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Okay,
yes,
so you could be interesting for them to become more engaged so that they know career-wise additional ways to benefit their curriculum as far as that's concerned.
No, great point.
Okay, thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Great. Now I'd like to ask Dr. Williams to just give you a brief update about the status of our TB investigation that involved the neonatal intensive care unit.
Thank you, and thank you for that last report.
Okay. Thanks. I understand you got a short briefing about this last meeting, and a lot has happened since we last shared this with you. So first I wanted to recognize the two people who have been doing a lot of work on managing this big effort. Casey Hickox is our Epidemic Intelligence Service Officer from the CDC. She's back there, and she's been coordinating the efforts with the hospital. And then Rick Cicci's TB staff have been doing all the work with providing some treatment to people and doing the contact investigations, of which, again, have been fairly substantial. So the story, again, just as a quick recap, was there was a woman who delivered a set of extremely premature twins. That means they were born 12 to 16 weeks early, and back in May. And twin A died in June, and was the cause of death was documented as extreme prematurity, which is a fairly realistic diagnosis with that level of prematurity. Twin B remained in the hospital's neonatal intensive care unit at that point, and then everything changed when in July the woman died, and on autopsy was diagnosed with TB. Twin B at that point was the biggest concern, because they thought, oh well, maybe the baby's had TB also. So twin B was diagnosed with TB, and immediately placed in the neonatal in isolation in the NICU and in a negative pressure room, which is what would be recommended. So at that point, when the woman was diagnosed in July, we believe that pretty much all risks of contact pretty much ceased when the diagnoses were made. Unfortunately, we weren't able to find out anything about whether twin A had TB, because twin A had been buried already, and it was presumptively, we'll never know really what happened with twin A. Sorry, I'm going to have to read notes, because there's a lot of details here, and I don't want to get this wrong here. Prior to the woman's birth, she had been ill off and on, but really had not ended up in the hospital until I think it was 1 or 2 days before the delivery of her children, when she had premature rupture of membranes. And after that, was home again, and then had become ill a second time, and progressively became ill until she ended up being hospitalized and passing away. And before her eventual death, she had quite severe illness and had been transferred to a Southern California hospital for more high level of care where she passed away. So now at this point, we have actually three hospitals involved. The one that first saw her when she had the premature ruptured membranes, where she was just a very briefly there. She actually delivered in hospital, what we're calling Hospital B, which is the main focus of our efforts at this point, because both the babies were there as well. So, of course, as soon as we learned about this in July, upon her diagnosis, we began an epidemiologic investigation to try to determine, first of all, whether she or her infants were contagious with tuberculosis, which could have quite an implication on a lot of other people who had contact with her or them. Also to identify people who might have been exposed to the patient or the infants. And then, ideally, we would be able to find the case, this original case of tuberculosis, to find out where it came from. And just to mention, the hospital B, the primary one again here, has been very, very cooperative with us. We've done a lot of work with them. And also Hospital A as well, although there has been very minimal staff involved in that portion of things. So we've consulted the Curry Center, which is the TB consulting group in California for the western part of the United States, several times, as well as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention with their TB experts, and have gotten some advice from them that we should consider that the woman was presumptively infectious starting at the time when she was admitted to the hospital after the birth of her babies, because that was a sign that she had taken a turn for the worse. And so we're doing the investigation under that assumption that from that time on, which was, I think, later in July, through her death, July and through into her death in July, we possibly had a number of healthcare workers and family members and others exposed to her illness and potentially have contracted tuberculosis. So the a bunch of groups we had to deal with the contact tracings on, and so the family and friends of the woman herself and are 69 close family members and friends, and we tested all of them for tuberculosis. 13 of them had positive test results, although 7 of those were foreign-born, and we know being foreign-born is a risk factor for tuberculosis. So we don't know whether they were exposed to TB recently or, you know, possibly even in the very distant past. The next step to do is test chest x-rays. 2 of those people had abnormal chest x-rays, and they're currently undergoing treatment and further evaluation at our TB clinic. So that's, you know, that's the next step there. So that's where Rick's group is monitoring them. And that'll prevent them from passing on TB if they actually have active cases to anybody else. And then, of course, the hospital staff is a really large effort. We did a prioritization of the testing, making sure that we tried to test the people first who had had the most contact, and then kind of moved out from there to get everybody who could have had exposure to either the babies or the mother tested. So at this point, 155 staff members have been tested, and 4 of them were identified as having been exposed to TB. In other words, their tests were positive, you know, either recently or in the past. And again, it's always going to be very difficult to determine exactly what the situation was, you know, whether this woman had been or the babies had been their exposures, or if it had happened in the past. But, you know, of course, we're going on to evaluate them to see who needs to have treatment and follow up and that sort of thing. So we've tested the NICU staff, and the hospital has multiple NICUs. This actually infects just one NICU, because the baby was in the same high level of care NICU the whole time. So the other NICUs should not have had any possible exposure to tuberculosis. So that's a very good thing. But even then, we still had, you know, 155 staff members involved. So we looked at the NICU nursing staff, respiratory therapists, emergency room staff, ICU staff that took care of the mother, adult respiratory therapists, and the risk code response team, all of whom had contact with her again, as well as any nurse practitioners or physicians who came in to care for anybody, and then the labor and delivery and antepartum staff at both hospitals that could have dealt with her back when she was near her birth term. And they would have had presumably the least amount of exposure, because we're not necessarily assuming that she was contagious at that time. So we, at this point, haven't found anybody who has evidence of active TB. And so having a positive test does not mean you have active TB. Active TB is diagnosed through sputum tests. And we've gotten several sputum tests from these, or we've gotten sputum tests for all the people who've who've had positive tests, and we haven't found any positive sputums yet. There's one other person I think we're still investigating who's had a both a positive test and an abnormal chest x-ray, and she's under treatment, but we'll also try to get a sputum from her over time to see if she had developed illness or not. But if so, that would be our only known active case so far. And again, that's not necessarily going to happen. So given that we don't have any evidence at this point of any active TB circulating, we feel pretty confident that the NICU staff really had minimal exposure to tuberculosis. The babies are in incubators. They're fairly isolated. One of the respiratory therapists who had a positive test, you know, would probably have been more closely involved with the babies than most of the others. So what happens with that person's testing might give us a little more information. But at this time, you know, we don't think the other NICU babies would have been exposed as they're fairly separated from one another, or any visitors to the NICU parents or other people in there. So we're not recommending doing any testing either of those other NICU babies or of any parents or visitors at this time. Of course, we're continuously reassessing the situation as more test results come back. We have to do a second round of testing on the hospital staff who had taken care of the patients later, because TB tests don't necessarily become positive until 8 to 10 weeks after the exposure. So we're not quite at that point yet. So we will be doing a second round of testing, and that will give us a much better picture of the situation. And again, we're, you know, continue to work with the hospital to ensure that those things happen in a timely manner, and to get the results assessed and any follow-up on necessary treatment happening after that. So the other thing we're doing, we did decide to go ahead and send in notifications to the parents as well as the pediatricians of the NICU babies that were in the hospital at the same time as twins A and B. And just to notify them of what happened, and also let them know at this point we're not recommending any testing for any of them. We just thought that we wanted to make sure we could share that with them as well. And of course, if anything does change to where we feel that we have evidence that there was any spread, particularly from NICU baby to another NICU baby, then we would certainly change our recommendations for testing and do more close follow-up. But at this time, we're not thinking that'll be the necessary course of action. So I guess that's about it. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any detailed questions. Probably could be answered by Casey or Rick.
Mr. Jones.
So the only active case was the one infant, or the two infants, and the mother.
Well, we don't know actually who you can have a TB infection and a disseminated TB infection, and you're only active if you're actually coughing up sputum with TB in it. So we'll probably never know that about the mother or the first baby that died, because those specimens were not collected. So, you know, she was diagnosed, she had TB in her brain and the other places in her body, but and in her lungs, but that didn't necessarily mean that she was infectious.
Suggested that this strain was resistant in any manner? Or
no, fortunately, no. I think it's resistant to one of the antibiotics that's fairly commonly resistant to, and not the others. So the treatment should be very effective. And I believe that, right, Rick, can you confirm that?
It's freezing in here.
Yeah.
So, sorry. does the TB, how are the babies exposed in utero? Does it cross the placental barrier?
It probably before birth, and I don't think we'll ever know. It's one of those things that if they had a suspicion of that, they certainly could have done different autopsies in the beginning. But this is a fairly rare occurrence. There definitely has been congenital tuberculosis before. Published in the literature, although cases are few and far between, it's very difficult for us to get enough evidence to say this is what happened based on that. So, you know, this will probably be something else publishable to add to that small bank of information out there.
Thank you. It's always good to get good news back, and also to know that we have the safety nets and the procedures in place to make sure that things like that don't spread. So thank you for your report.
Yeah, thank you.
If I could, I'd just like to say a few words. First off, I am very grateful for the support that you've given to me in the district, particularly in the last year. And I very much appreciate the kind things you said to me at the start of the meeting. I only wish that my mom was here, because she would have believed those nice things that you said. I also wanted to just take a minute and thank the leadership team. They've been willing to go way beyond any kind of usual support to help me and support the staff and you. I also want to acknowledge the support that I've received and we've received from the union and actually from all the staff. I mean, going through the last year has been very, very difficult, and the way that our staff have been flexible and responded to the loss of the building and then all of the things involved in reestablishing the programs here in this building have been very difficult. And I also just want to acknowledge the hard work from Valerie and Jackie to support these board meetings. It's really a daunting logistical task, and they've been wonderful to help, again, get me through these meetings and to help do the groundwork so that the meetings can run as efficiently as possible. And it's been a great honor and privilege to serve the district, and I really can tell you that the progress we've made is, as you can see, totally a team effort. It's not in any way a one-person show, and we have a great team of very dedicated, value-driven people here. And I also just want to say I have great confidence in Dr. Iser. He, in fact, even over the last several weeks in the discussions I've had with him, I've become more and more impressed that he's a person who will be able to lead the district and continue the progress that we've made. I think he'll be a great communicator. And so I just wanted to thank you and tell you I'll be constantly looking to see that you're not in the newspapers, no Legionnaires, and to watch the future progress and development of the Southern Nevada Health District. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Madel. Our next item is informational items, and you have those in front of you. And then our final item is public comment. Do we have anybody wishing to speak in public comment? Okay, don't see any. Just before we adjourn, just wanted to remind everybody that there's a farewell reception for Dr. Madel. I believe that's upstairs on the mezzanine. As I was pulling up this invitation again, it says take a hike. I hope that's not a message to you. I don't think it is. I think it's to the rest of us to follow you up there. But again, thank you so much for everything. And with that, unless I have anything else, meeting adjourned.